Welcome to another exciting episode of Guitar Talk with John and Jamie. This is John.
This is Jamie.
Wow, he's excited. This is a new thing we're doing here where Jamie actually has enthusiasm at the beginning of the show.
As opposed to the end.
At the end.
We're done finished. And I'm yes. happy.
So today, we have a special guest, which we're really excited about, Mr. Mitch Forman, who is Jamie and I's favorite keyboard player. And we were just discussing the fact that he will be the only keyboard player that we bring on the show of Guitar Talk.
Wait, I'm getting a phone call. It's Keith Jarrett.
Hello, Keith.
It's
Keith Jarrett.
Yeah, can you come right on the show?
Keith Jarrett wants to be on the show. Well, Keith, I'm really sorry, but I've given my word, and we're going to stick by it.
All right, sorry.
We're
Keith.
Stick by it. Besides, the groaning thing just doesn't work for me, you know. And we also have Maggie here, Maggie the dog. So Maggie might contribute at one point or another in the conversation. And so today we're going to be talking about what it's like playing with guitar players. And Jamie and I have our opinions about that. But Mitch, you've had the opportunity to play with a lot of great players, and just your thoughts on who you play with. And they can't see that, you know, that when you make faces and shudder.
That's why I make those faces.
Yeah, but if you shudder and your shoulders go up, I have to describe it for our listening audience, you know.
Hello.
Dead air.
I'm just thinking, pondering.
Okay, well, we can do specifics. I was a Mahavishnu freak. In fact, when we met in New York and I was a synclavier person,
I was
one of the reasons I became a synclavier operator was because of Mahavishnu Orchestra and John McLaughlin. So I know at that time you were playing with Mahavishnu. What was that like?
You know what? It was a wild experience. I got the job first through a friend of mine, Bill Evans. And the call was, can you come to Paris and play on a record with John McLaughlin and Billy Cobble? And can you be there like tomorrow? I was like, yeah, all right, I'm in.
Would you have thought, was there a Keith Jarrett moment where you're kind of thinking, nah?
There was really no Keith Jarrett. It was a little bit of an awkward moment, truthfully, because there was a little drama. John's girlfriend at the time, Katia Lebec, was playing keyboards in the band.
Oh, that was Bella Horizonte at that time.
Maybe it was slightly after that where they were doing a new Mahavishnu project.
Right.
And I think Bill was trying to get, you know, kind of getting in between a couple.
Oh,
a musical couple. And anyway, it was really fun. She is awesome as her sister,
yes.
Who I met and got a chance to hang out with.
I had a big crush on Katia Lebec.
Really?
Yeah.
Her
big
sister
crush.
Was Marielle. They were a duo.
Yeah.
Piano. Yeah.
She's supposedly like this amazing sight reader. Like she can read anything. Literally.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing. I don't know, but I've never seen her sight reading in action, but pretty amazing. Like just technically, musically,
right.
Amazing players. So anyway, it was just, you were thrust. I was thrust in this, you know, position of playing with McLaughlin. And it was great. And I did it. We did one record, two records perhaps. And then, in like a year or 2 years of touring. Year and a half.
I've seen videos, actually. You were very young and handsome.
I was young and handsome. There might have been even leather pants involved.
I never saw the leather pants.
That was a different video. There's a Wayne Shorter video with me with leather pants.
Okay, all of you in Guitar Talk podcast land, if you can find this video, we will post it. So just let us know if you find it.
Send it in.
Please send it in. Jamie had a great idea. Why don't you talk about the one word thing? Because I thought that was a good idea.
Well, I thought it might be an interesting thing. I'm, as you probably know, because you and I kind of know each other a little bit, Mitch, I have a Pat Metheny fixation. He's one of my favorite guitar players of all time. And so I thought it might be fun to just kind of, you know, give you a guitar player and then in a brief sentence or two, just sort of give us your summary of that guitar player.
And these are guys he's played with?
He played with.
Because I just, random guitar players like Steve Bortlefledge,
yeah,
would be hard for him.
No, yeah. Not really.
Yeah. So
as he types furiously, is
for example,
like Steve Bortlefledge. Steve Bortlefledge.
Yeah.
.org.
Bortlefelch. So for example, like you were just talking about John McLaughlin. So take John McLaughlin. Like
one sentence.
Yeah, like one sentence.
One sentence. It's a couple sentences.
Okay.
The weirdest thing about playing with John McLaughlin was after a couple years actually getting used to his stuff and not being impressed when on this really fast lick stamp, you're like, oh, that's that one. But that being aside, he was amazing. And John McLaughlin is excellent at many things other than music.
Oh, yeah.
Very competitive and excellent. Diving, billiards, anything.
Billiards, interesting. Yeah. Foosball?
I don't know if we ever played foosball, but he was a great guy. He took us to some great. This is more than a paragraph.
Interesting. Because it's inside.
The paragraph was just if it was.
We don't really have a true expectation of what you're going to say.
It's just a jumping off point.
He was great. He was just supportive. The band was fun. It was really fun. He would take you to incredible exotic locations. You had a day off. You'd stay at like a monastery way out of your way in the middle of Italy on the top of a hill. It was really cool. We did a lot of cool things.
Was it hard learning the material? I mean, Jamie's just come from 6 years in Zappa, plays Zappa, which is like some of the hardest technical material on the planet. Was it really challenging?
It wasn't as...
Let's let the garbage truck be in pitch.
There it is. I warned you.
No, I know. It's good. This is part of our show, folks. This is real world recording.
Yeah.
You know?
What was your question? You just asked something that was...
How hard it was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you for
calling. It wasn't that difficult, truthfully. It was a phase. It wasn't like the original Mahavishnu kind of phase of his stuff. It was a little... He was trying to recreate that, in a sense, with different players. And anyway, it wasn't all that difficult.
Okay.
And I've also... I have not the greatest memory between you and me and whoever else listening. So I've always had little cheat sheets.
His original Mahavishnu Orchestra score book was like a Bible for me when I was a kid. Like that was one of the first major technical challenges I took on.
Right.
And I learned pretty much most of the tunes. But the problem is there was never really an opportunity to play it because most cats were not that interested in jamming or Dance of Maya,
right.
You know, or Birds of Fire. You know, it just wasn't one of those things.
I had the live Mahavishnu album, but I had it on a track. But remember the A-track tapes? They would make quadraphonic A-track tapes so that they were split up so that the the right channel would go to like I can't remember exactly how it was, but it was they were split up so like tracks 1 and 2 would be like the left channel.
I see.
And then channels 3 and 4 would be the right channel.
Right, forward and back.
So if you were listening to that on a quadraphonic system, which were sort of the rage, you know, at the time with the, you know, the lava lamps and everything,
all right.
you would have this, it was sort of like surround sound before there was surround, you know? And so I had an 8-track tape of the live one. So what that meant was if the 8-track tape was on and it was on, you know, like track 2, I would only be hearing guitar. Naked guitar.
That's awesome.
Because I had a stereo. I didn't have a quadraphonic system.
Cool.
So I would just have a guitar. So I could sit and I could figure out, you know, those crazy fast ostinato patterns that he would do. And I could like try and figure out, you know, how in the hell is he?
That Shakti stuff was at the foundation. All that raga stuff with his right hand, that wrist, that floating wrist. And did you ever play the Egberto Gismonti tunes that he had to do? Or was that part of the repertoire?
No.
Because those are ridiculously hard things that he was trying to get going.
It's pretty insane. To listen back, when I listen back to a lot of his stuff now, it sounds... almost in a way, almost a little unrefined. You know what I mean? Because if I listen to, you know, Electric Guitarist or what was the other one?
Ecstasy and...
No, Extrapolation.
And Extrapolation.
Yeah.
And, you know, because his tone was just so raw.
Very raw.
And it's almost like, you know, in the Silent Way stuff or Jack Johnson, you know, the Miles, Jack Johnson, you know, which I believe was the first thing he did with Miles.
I thought Bitches Brew.
You know what? I think it... Well, I'm not sure. I've just been listening to this live record. It was one that they made Live Evil from.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with it?
Yeah.
Live Evil was a live set in Washington, live at the Cellar Door.
Yeah.
And McLaughlin came and sat in on the
Saturday night.
Was that his first time or not?
That might have been.
That was 1980.
Whoever's listening can set our asses straight, please, on what order things actually happening, because we're like older dudes and can't track this stuff.
But that's a great record.
Yeah. Live Evil's great.
Not Live at the Cellar Door. Live at the Cellar Door is what Live Evil was culled from.
Yeah, I don't know that.
Yeah.
And it was 3 nights in Washington, and the first 2 nights there's no McLaughlin. And then they played I didn't get to that last seat, but I hear you can almost hear him come in like and set up while they're playing
really?
The recording.
Yeah.
Oh, he just came in and wailed.
But his tone and his approach on those records is so is just so raw and like just a loud overdriven guitar. Right.
It's almost like wasn't a big thought of what kind of tone he's going to. Right. He just said, I can play this stuff. I'm going to plug in and it's, play loud.
And he was like Coltrane. He was like a Coltrane sort of like mentality, and just, I'm going to play my ass off.
Yeah.
And that's pre-India, because his raga stuff came later.
Yeah.
All that technical stuff came later.
But
this wasn't one sentence.
I know, but you know, that's okay. This was the goal, so it would take us somewhere. And so now.
But we need to do the one that really is important.
That's Pamathini.
Pat Metheny. Yeah. You know, my experience was one record, one tour, like a two-week tour, three-week tour.
Really?
With Pat. Yeah,
so was there a time, was like Lyle not there, or is he?
It was, the record was called Reunion, and it was a Gary Burton project, actually. Oh. So it didn't involve Lyle at all. And you know what? The amazing thing about him, one word, if I'm allowed, consistency. It's like always brilliant. Like no... In the studio, there's no bad take. He'd take two takes, no reason for it. The first one was awesome. The second one,
this is soloing or the whole tune?
Solo, anything.
Really?
Anything. And playing and soloing, he's just as always
focused. You know,
I think he's so committed to his instrument and his craft that he spent that much time at it that there's nothing ever less than excellent coming out.
So like my commentary, Jamie, when we were talking about this, he mentioned this, and I said, you know, as an older player, I just look at him and his neck, like the way he holds his head when he's playing and his neck craned forward and bent down. And I go, oi, it's like after like 35, 40 years of playing like that, does his neck hurt? Is it hiding him? Cause it's like, you say it's great, but it's like his neck looked like it hurts me all the time, you know? But so consistency.
Yeah.
One more.
Yeah.
Or excellence.
Excellence. Is it focus? I mean, is he like when you're working with him, is he completely focused on what's happening or is it relaxed?
It was a long time ago. I don't remember. And another thing that popped in when you said his focus is when we would play, we'd have gigs where there'd be two sets and he would insist that we play not all the material we know, play one set twice, do it really well. It was like not even if we had more songs, he would say, we're going to play this and we're going to play it again.
Oh, so that comes from the Ryles days. Did you ever see him at Ryles?
No.
When I lived in Boston, I went to Berkeley. I played downstairs with a guy named Herman Johnson. Mm-hmm. And Pat's like 2 years older than me, I think. 2 or 3 years older. And he used to play upstairs at Ryles. And I used to sneak when I was on the breaks for my sets.
How would I have ever seen him there?
Weren't you at Boston? You weren't
I never lived in Boston in my entire life.
Wait, you guys know each other?
No, I thought for some reason you were another Berkeley guy.
I didn't go to Berkeley.
He used to do sort of the same thing when he would do the Ryles gigs.
Right.
He would do the same show twice to... And him and Mike Stern would get...
Mike Stern.
Yeah.
Good segue, by the way.
Yeah, perfect. Good segue. Thank you, Mike Stern, I recorded, I think it was Upside Downside. Was that his first record?
That's
great. Yeah.
And I remember him setting up... This is an anecdote, not a one-word thing. I remember him setting up and plugging his thing. And he said, however old he was at the time, he said, I'm 30, 20, whatever he was. And he said... I don't think he said, oh, he might have. But he said, and I still don't have a sound. I don't have my own sound, is what he said. He has the same sound he's had for years and years.
Yeah.
But same pedals, actually.
He's complaining, probably.
Yeah.
Mike Stern, I don't know. What can you say? He's hilarious. He's
quirky.
He's quirky. He's funny. He's a great guy. He has,
That album, Upside Downside, of all of the Stern albums, that first one, still to this day, is my favorite. Has Scuffle on it.
Yep,
right.
That's a great tune.
Yeah. The stuff with Jocko. Jocko's on a couple of tracks.
Right,
Jocko's
on, isn't it?
Mood Swings.
Steve Jordan on it?
Yes.
Yep. Track
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing? Steve Jordan or no?
No, I think Weckl.
Weckl
played on
it. I really
that was a transformative record for a lot of people, actually.
Yeah, and I think, was it Steve Kahn produced it?
Oh, yeah. K-A-H-N or
yeah.
C? There's another one.
K-A-H-N, the guitar player.
Yeah,
he produced it.
Good.
An interesting thing that I wanted to ask you about is that might be interesting for guitar players to hear, especially coming from the perspective of someone who's as heavy a keyboard player as you.
Wait.
Yeah.
This is not visual medium. Let's clarify.
No. I mean, just, you know, a musician. What do you look for in a guitar player? Like if you're on a gig with a guitar player, like what for you is going to make you leave that gig and go, well, that guy was a really great player. That was a good experience. Or like, man, I don't ever want to work with that guy again.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's kind of the same as working like with two keyboard players in a sense, which is a very specific situation that can be incredible or unenjoyable, and can lean towards unenjoyable sometimes. Just because it's so. Just with the guitar and piano, you're you have the same function a lot of times in mm-hmm. the band. Mm-hmm. And so when it works, it's with someone who's at least paying attention. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, people are, there's millions of great players, but the ones that I enjoy playing with the most are the ones that, you know, there's a give and take. They're saying, oh, he's got this part covered. He's got mm-hmm. this frequency range. He's got mm-hmm. this rhythmic thing going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're aware of what the other person is doing and you stay, you know, compliment or stay out of the way.
Yeah.
And sometimes that doesn't always happen. And when it does, it.
But that's in general. I mean, that's in general. It could be anything. I mean, I know a lot of guitar players, but Jamie and I have a duo together and there's not a lot of guys that I want to be in a duo with.
Right.
I mean, it's just because the way we speak to each other. I'm more and more convinced that we're conversing, like that we're having a very long conversation as musicians in the course of our lives, and that we're speaking in these frameworks where the dialects are styles. And what we've done is we've cultivated this ability to converse. And there are people who I want to have conversations with. And then there's a lot of people in my life I don't want to have conversations with. And it's not just mm-hmm. musical. And I think that right. and, you know, musically, when you can find someone that you can converse with, that it's a really special thing, because it's, especially with you, I mean, you're a very, very rich harmonic and rhythmic palette. You know, I've played with you a few times and I've always been happy and joyful and stayed the fuck out of the way because it's so beautiful. I want to hear what you're playing, and I'd like to like be able to be in that space while you're doing it.
I feel like I'm gonna get some guitars now. We'll all sit and play and kumbaya moment.
Yeah, ukulele.
Was it a kumbaya moment?
Yeah, a little bit.
I dig what he's saying. I did a gig with you a couple of months ago, and I won't, like, we've only actually played together a couple of times.
Yes.
I think. And the first time I was just like, I went home just like my mind was blown. And this last time, more recently, when we worked together, my goal was to just lay out as much as possible, you know, and just stay out of the way. And then if there was a clear cut little spot for me to be, I would try and be. And I still left thinking, man, I stepped all over the guy. I got in his way, you know. But yeah, because you bring so much to the party as a, you know, harmonically that right. there's, you know.
But that's what it's, there's. I mean, sometimes I'm probably bring too much when and not, don't leave enough room. And
that's, I don't agree with that.
Well, no. I mean, that's, that. Yeah. That can be,
but I'm
if you're not used to it,
yeah.
If you're not used to playing with a guitar player or another.
But you're a strong player. Harmonic. No, you're a strong player. There's nothing you're, and what you do is I've always been a beautiful thing. And we're not trying to kiss ass. We're just talking, I mean, again, you really are going to be the only keyboard player on the show. And there's a reason for that is because the what you're bringing as a musician to the conversation is really interesting to us. You know, when we were in the Farm Fur thing, I remember the thing with Ferroni, Steve Ferroni, when we were doing that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was like a really bizarre gig
because
neither of us were really that, you know, it was like.
What was it called?
Farm Fur.
Farm Fur.
Farm Fur. I don't know. It was with the DeLeo brothers. I think that was it. That was, you never heard the name of the band?
No.
Really?
From Stone Temple Pilots?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was really an interesting gig. It was really
okay.
Yeah, it was. We'll tell you about it sometime.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, wait, I have one that I'd like to see.
Yeah.
Henderson.
Yeah, because actually, he's actually one of my favorite guitar players, and I don't like a lot of guitar players. So
He's amazing.
Yeah.
And amazing. And you know what? When you're saying you're getting out of the way for me,
yeah.
I get out of the way for him.
Yeah.
Because it's like his. It's so strong, his thing, his sound and his thing is so strong that it's like, I feel like I don't want to touch it and mess it up. So I tend to get out of his way.
Wow.
But
he has great ideas. We were talking about this the other day.
Endless ideas.
Yeah.
Just endless.
He's amazing. He's amazing. He's a funny, I've done a few recordings with him. He's very, he's just into it, focused into it, kind of anal about it and, you know.
Yeah, he's got a strong reputation for being very specific about his sound, his detail about the things. That thing, when he plays the thing with his foot, what's the thing with the knob on the ground with his foot? Where he's like doing this weird dance.
Oh, it's a volume knob.
It's a volume, but it's instead of a pedal he has it on.
Yeah, instead of a pedal he has it on.
Really?
He can control it better and he has it down to where
that's really cool.
He's funny. He's a funny guy because he's very self-deprecating too. Remember the band that he was in called The Players? It was like in the 80s. It was him, Steve Smith, Jeff Berlin, and T. Lavitz from The Dregs.
Right, right.
And they did this project. It was just one album called, side one of it was a studio album, and side two was recorded live at a place that used to be here in LA called At My Place.
Oh, right.
I think it was At My Place. And there was a solo on there on a song called The Creeping Terror, which was, you know, each they all contributed songs. And Scott's tune was called The Creeping Terror. And he takes a solo on that. It's a blues, you know. And it's one of the most mind-blowing guitar solos to this day that I think I've ever heard in my life. And I remember like quite a while ago, I was like, man, sometime I'd love to get together with you and like just kind of go over that, you know. And, you know, because right. there were some things in there I'm like, even as a guitar player, you know, at this point in my life, I can pretty much listen to a lot of guitar things. And, oh, yeah, I know how he's doing that.
Right.
You know, I know what technique he's, I know how he's going. Right. With Scott's one of the only guys left where even when I'm sitting right in front of him I'm like, I have no idea.
Yeah, he's done some, like, some intros to some songs that are like, they're kind of mind-blowing.
And I asked him about that.
He's like, there was one thing you were doing where you're playing on the turnaround, you played over the bar line. He goes, man, it was probably a mistake. I'm sure it was a mistake. I probably was out of ideas and I was just running licks. Right. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think so, pal. But yeah, I saw him play real recently and it was, they were doing this thing over Rhythm Changes and he just, the whole band dropped out and he just started playing and just kind of it was sort of the thing that you and I were talking about. Where it's just, everything's just kind of getting reinvented. And I'm like, okay, where does the line get drawn from? Like, okay, here are the written changes and here's what you're playing. How are you getting from point A to point? You know,
we could do that I'd like to do that as another show where you're interested to talk about the idea of harmony and application of the conversation. Cause I think that would be really useful. Cause a lot of guitar players are really focused on the geometry and the geography of how the guitar works, shapes. But when you start getting into real color and real harmony and real improvisation, like being able to move more fluidly, I was really excited when Jamie said he was coming over here to talk to you about harmony and study some stuff with you.
Right.
Because as a guitar player, it's not really a common conversation. It's, you know, a lot of shape-based playing and a lot of sort of physics, but it's not really the connectivity between how you get from point A to point B and break the rules and get there.
Right.
And I think that would be a really great option.
Why do you think that's true of guitar as opposed to other instruments?
It's a transposing instrument.
Yeah, guitar is such a pattern-based instrument.
Right.
That it's really easy to, you know, I mean, almost from day one when you start getting into learning scales and things like that, it's pattern one, pattern two, pattern this, pattern that. It's a very shape-based, pattern-based, very visual instrument. Right.
That's why our teacher, Ted Green, a guy we studied with, it was this incredibly rich, he was this guy who was known for like Mozart level sort of improvisations built like Bill Evans, the pianist at level improvisations on guitar that were not geometrically or geographically shaped. It was like, what is actually the harmonically and melodically best way to have this conversation to occur.
Right.
And he would do these 2 and 3 hour explorations where he would sit with his eyes closed in these little bistros and play like, you know, 20 tunes and get from point A to point B and not know how he did it. And they were. I'll show you some stuff at some point. He's an amazing guy. So this has been a slightly longer episode of Guitar Talk with one of our heroes, Mitch Forman. We want to thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
And please send in your comments and thoughts, and we look forward to responding. We may do another episode with Mitch and talk about harmony, and we look forward because he is going to be the only keyboard player we ever talk to on the show. I give my word on that. And please check us out. We're going to be at the LA Amp Show this weekend, and visit us at guitarpodcast.com.
By the time they hear this, the Amp Show will probably be over.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Time.
You can edit that out.
I can edit that out.
Yeah.
You can edit that out.
We're going to edit that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mitch, any thoughts?
Hey, no, thank you for having me.
Pleasure
to talk to you guys. And I'm so proud to be the only keyboard player on
Ever.
All right.
So far.
I'm telling you. Katia Lebeck can call me. Yeah. Keith can call me.
They're banging down the door.
Oscar Peterson could rise from the grave
and call me
on the phone.
And I'd
think about it and then I'd say,
what about Herbie Hancock? Herbie Hancock knocks on your door.
Herbie Hancock knocks on my door. I would say, you know what? We had Mitch. We have Mitch.
All right.
All right. So this has been another episode of Guitar Talk with John and Jamie. Thanks a lot for listening. And we're going to sort of meander our way out, which is what we do.
We talk and music and stuff plays over this part.
We don't really have anything sensible to say.
It's very professional and well produced.
We're just sort of meandering about whatever we're thinking about. It's like awesome. That your red shirt and your great dog and your truck.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Hey, do you have a restroom?
Yeah.
It's going to be fading out right about this.